Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
It's an organization that distributes 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people. The Capital Area Food Bank is the largest source of food in the metropolitan area for the needy. Joining me is Crystal Hare. She's the Chief Development Officer of the Capital Area Food Bank, and O'Donna Matthews, who is a volunteer with the organization. Crystal, this is I've heard of the Capital Area Food Bank, but I have to confess, I really don't know how it works, and I think that's going to be true with a lot of our listeners, and we want to inform them because you do some really good things. So give us a little bit of information on how the concept came about.
A lot of food banks cropped up in 1979 when food stamps were cut, and we opened our doors in 1980 when we saw that the Maryland Food Bank opened up serving Baltimore residents, and there was a great need. Food stamps were cut. People were crying out for food. So the Interfaith Conference, Division of Planning and Aging got together along with Lynn Brantley, our founder, and we opened our doors, and the first year we had a couple of hundred agencies and distributed about 1,000 pounds of food.
Okay, now we're going to talk about how that where that food comes from, because you get it from a variety of sources. That in itself to me is just absolutely fascinating, and this the scope of the organization as well. But O'Donna, it's lovely to see you. I'm sure many of our listeners remember you from when you were the consumer advisor for Giant Food, and I suppose that you're going into volunteering for the food bank is a natural result of that.
Exactly, because I was at Giant when there was no food bank, and we had people like Mitch Snyder from the Community for Creative Nonviolence and other activists saying, don't throw that food away. We don't want to climb in your dumpster and get this. We want you to donate it. And I remember the meetings that were held, and also in visiting the stores, you'd see the partner agencies, maybe from a small church or a youth group organization or a senior citizen home, come and pick up the donations directly from the store, as well as now what's established, you know, through the food bank itself.
Okay, so now is the food bank a central repository for the food, Crystal? Is this where it comes in and then it's distributed through these 700 agencies? Or tell me how it works. Tell me, if I were down there, what would I be seeing happening today?
Exactly. You'd see a 48,000 square foot warehouse in the district, 12,000 square feet in Northern Virginia, and the food is collected and then distributed. It's once it's collected, it's got to be sourced and gone through by our workers and volunteers, and then we distribute it out. Well, we source it from the different growers and retailers. There are three different segments. There's the salvage food, and that's going to be what's donated from the grocery stores and the manufacturers, whether it's a mislabeling or whether it's product that's not selling. And then it on community food drives, then it's got to be sorted by volunteers by category if it doesn't come in bulk. And it's categorized, and then our agencies come in, and they actually shop, kind of like a grocery store.
Ah, so now these would be agencies, community agencies,
all
who are out there actually working hands-on with the people who are hungry.
Exactly. Over 700 nonprofit feeding programs. So they may do a lot of things. Some may be soup kitchens, some may be senior centers or kids after-school programs. But the one thing they have in common is that they also feed the people that they serve. So they use us as a resource and save their great budget dollars for other things.
Wow, that's an incredible concept. What a good way to utilize resources and not waste everybody's time, because if all these people were trying to do the same job you all are doing, it would be chaos.
Exactly.
All right, now, looking at it from the standpoint of the food industry, what kinds of things would Giant, and I'm sure there are other stores, food stores that probably all of them participate in this, Crystal had said that this might be food that is not going to be consumed, or it's not a fast seller or whatever. What do you do about things like expiration dates? Things like the food safety is what I'm trying to get
right,
to.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's very clear guidelines on what can be donated. All the stores know if it's that day expiration, someone else can use it and cook it for dinner that night.
Absolutely.
If it's past
usually it's good a few days the sell-by date, right?
Exactly. So it's both perishable and non-perishable products that can be donated safely. It's just product that Giant or whatever retailer can't sell any further. There are also manufacturers that will call and say, hey, look, we have so much of this product. It didn't sell on Thanksgiving, you know, whatever.
Sure.
We want to donate it. And they may directly distribute that to the food bank. So there's a variety of ways. But yes, it is all safe. And I think it's you can feel assured about that. And also the food bank trains the agencies how to make sure that they're cooking, and they also double check the labeling on the products and that kind of thing.
Because the agencies themselves may be the ones that produce the food for the people to come in and eat, right?
Right. Yes. They're preparing a meal or meals.
Is that generally true across the board? Is there any point where you distribute food, like canned food, to individuals?
Yes. Some of our agencies do just distribute bags or boxes of food to individuals. But there are, like I said, soup kitchens. And, of course, they would prepare the food and probably kids programs where they actually provide a hot meal or a hearty snack or what have you.
And you're the biggest source of food for these organizations.
Oh, yes. We're the largest supplier in the greater Washington area.
Just going to say one other example of the shelf-stable foods is there's a kids' weekend backpack program where kids who are at risk and they may not have food for the weekend, they will send home 5 to 7 pounds of shelf-stable foods, including snacks, for that child to make it through the weekend.
Wow.
And when you think of that, if they didn't have that backpack of food coming home, they wouldn't be eating. And how well can you do in school or anything else without food?
You can't. Absolutely can't. No, that's a critical thing for children to learn, is to have proper nutrition. You know, it just boggles my mind to think about the logistics of distributing all this food. I mean, this is a lot of food we're talking about and a lot of people that you're serving. So what would you have the agencies? You say you have 700 agencies that work with you, these being
right.
the ones that are the community organizations. They come to you and get the food.
Yes.
But you all have to get the food from somewhere. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? That is a humongous job.
Actually, Lynn Branley actually used to be a food resource person at the food bank and worked her way up. So we have a whole food resource team, one person that focuses just on community food drives. We also have two gentlemen who really work on sourcing and having food resource relationships, and we need those corporate donations.
Now, explain to me exactly what you mean by that.
Well, we get food in maybe from Dole, or we just got food in for a donation from Smithfield. So it happens all the time, but sometimes you have to work those relationships. Some of the relationships come through Feeding America, which is our national umbrella, which is made up of over 200 food banks, including one in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And we are only allowed logistically because of our area to source through our own area unless the food comes in from a relationship with Feeding America. So the greater Washington area is food poor. We've got a lot of great government, but...
not a lot of producers.
Exactly.
And so how do you do that?
We depend heavily on grocery stores and retailers that are in the area. So it's very tough for us because of our position here.
Now, do the grocery stores get credit for this? Is there a tax credit for donating food?
Yes, they do. Yes,
well, good. I mean, they should.
Yes.
That seems fair to me. Let's just take a brief pause here. Can't believe the time's flying by. Let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. And I'm Shirley Rooker. My guests are Crystal Hare. She's the Chief Development Officer of the Capital Area Food Bank. And O'Donna Matthews, who is a volunteer with the organization. And we're talking about feeding people, hungry people in the metropolitan area. That's such an important subject. Okay, we were talking about getting the food in from the grocery stores and the fact that they do get a tax credit for it, which they certainly deserve. But there's also a lot of expense in the grocery stores just to put this food together and get it ready for you all, isn't there?
I'm sure.
So there's a big effort donation from these grocery stores just beyond whatever they might get tax credit for.
Exactly. And they also run checkout hunger type programs where customers can come in and scan and donate money directly, which is also very helpful because we can certainly do more with cash than we can with the food itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the different food drives that are held, whether it's the stuff a truck at the holiday season where customers, I know at Giant, other stores can buy like $10 worth of food that actually goes into the truck and then goes to the food bank, and it's all sorted and distributed for the holidays in particular. But the needs are year round, you know, and I think if you might want to say, well, who are these people? They are the working poor. They are 50% of the people needing food assistance are people on minimum wage jobs or people maybe working two jobs or maybe no job. And I think almost 50% of the clients are children. And
wow.
Children at risk, only 5% are homeless. And a lot of people might be surprised at that. But if you look at who the food is going to, it's going to the working poor primarily.
To people who are trying to make a living and they just can't make ends meet. I mean, this is a very expensive area to live in to begin with.
Right.
And when you're at a minimum wage, I would think it's very, very difficult for people. What is someone, let's suppose someone listening to this program says, well, I really could use their help. How do they qualify? Would they go to a community agency? They wouldn't come to you. Would that be? Or can they come to you?
They should
and
call,
you can direct them?
They should call us, and then we actually run a hunger hotline. So what we do is we find out their location and what their specific needs are, and then we will link them up with the closest area food pantry or what have you that can serve them.
Oh, that's incredible. And that number is 202-526-5344. That's 202-526-5344. And they can find out the resources available in their community. And you cover the entire metropolitan area.
Exactly.
Which is awesome. What was surprising, I guess it shouldn't be surprising to me, is that you just had a significant increase in the number of people who are hungry.
25%.
Wow.
And those are the people just that we're reaching. We're still not sure. I mean, a few years ago, the census said that there were over 633,000 people at risk of hunger in the greater Washington area. We estimated through our recent hunger study with Feeding America that we're touching about 478,000 people. So there's still a gap, clearly, because we know that other number has increased.
Mm-hmm. You know they're still out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we're doing our best, and we're getting as much food out there as we can each and every day.
So you work with groups as small as churches and as large as major community associations.
Exactly. A lot of faith-based organizations, but a lot of the main names you guys know, some Alive in Northern Virginia, Martha's Table. So a lot of big agencies, but also very many small agencies that just have a couple of volunteers and maybe just one or two paid staff.
I know our church. Does they don't do it every day, but they do have I'm not sure how often they do it now, but they do prepare food for people in the community,
and it's very important. And what our agencies are telling us is that they're seeing newcomers, people they've never seen before, and the lines are doubling, and they're seeing people for the first time. Even college students are now depending on this because they're trying to pay for their educations to go out there and hopefully get jobs that may or may not be there. So it's really disheartening.
So the screening for need would be through the community associations that actually provide them the hands-on help.
Exactly.
So you would not be doing that.
No, but we do screen our agencies because we have to make sure that the food is given away for free. And we have a whole agency relations team. And actually, we get audited by Feeding America. They'll be out sometime in June to audit us to make sure that we are adhering to all the standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice to know that there's so much care taken in making certain that safety guidelines are followed for these people and that you are following it down the line. So that should give people some comfort in if they're participating in a food kitchen or something like that.
And let me just add that 92 cents of every dollar, if you're donating money, goes directly to food and our education programs.
Wow.
92 cents.
How many volunteers do you have?
Over 11,000. Saves us over $700,000 off our bottom line.
Wow. And that's just in the metropolitan area?
Yes.
So if people want to volunteer, can they call that same number?
Definitely.
Give it to us.
Check out our website, 202-526-5344.
And the website is
www.capitalareafoodbank.org.
Okay.
And I would say, now we're getting toward the end of the school season. It is a wonderful opportunity to go out there as a family, individuals, whatever. Get the young people seeing what the needs are and how a food bank works. I mean, what an education that can be. And you can sign up online, you can call them. It's very easy to do. And I think if you take the tour, if you have the time, it's well worth it. I was there last week.
I'm sure it would be. Actually, that's an excellent idea, something that parents could take their kids on a field trip and go through the food bank. Take a bunch of neighborhood kids. Let them see how they can make contributions to the community. Sometimes I think we take everything we have for granted, and it would be useful for our children to see how you're reaching out to help people
right.
who need it and who may need it only for a short period of time or for long term. It doesn't matter.
Right. And you can pack the boxes and you can see how they shop for food. And I guess the other fascinating part to me when I was there on a tour last week is the food bank is more than a warehouse. They spend a lot of time educating and empowering the community. And they have probably 40 to 50 workshops that they provide for people, the local agencies, for them to understand, how do you stock a food pantry? What do you do with this food? And they have an excellent nutrition person there who can show people, how can you eat on $16 a week?
Wow.
And she had dried beans and salsa and cheese and tortillas, and she had a wonderful recipe for a burrito. But the people there are very creative because you never know what's going to come in. You have to be able to send this food out, and some of it's non-food too, but mostly food, to people and make sure they can eat it. And so the training for the staff at these local agencies is very important. A lot of people may not be aware of that.
I wasn't aware of it. It seems to me that you must have large cooling facilities. You have to have large refrigerator sections.
Exactly, but not large enough.
Yeah.
Not large
and
enough.
And freezers as well.
Exactly.
So you would accept, now what about people who are listening? Donate money, donate time, donate food through local food drives are ways that we can help.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know, as Odonna said, there's a lot of talk about this, of course, at Christmas and Thanksgiving time, but this is not a need that's only seasonal. It's a need that goes on year round.
Exactly. I mean, especially in the summer, kids who are in summer school or not in summer school, they need to eat. So we do have a lot of other programs as well that are outreach that don't include the agencies. We run a senior brown bag program monthly. So we go out to the communities where there are a lot of seniors and we distribute brown bags with product and recipes. Maybe the recipes, as Odonna said, doesn't have the exact recipe to go with the food included, but it helps because seniors at the end of the month, their food stamps run out and they don't know what to do. So it just helps them stretch their dollars and not have to make a choice between prescription and food, which a lot of them do.
And certainly someone may like to cook can volunteer to do a cooking demo. I mean, they're looking for all kinds of volunteers. They can't have one person training everyone. So there's lots of ways to contribute and be involved in your community.
I'm going to come back to that. We're going to take a little pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guests are Crystal Hare. She's the Chief Development Officer of the Capital Area Food Bank, and Odonna Matthews, who volunteers with the organization. Now, you were just saying that cooking demonstrations. Now, these are taking place at the food bank itself, teaching member agencies
how to
utilize the food.
Right. They do two things, and they have their nutrition education person teaching the agencies. And then they would also look for volunteers to go out to the particular agencies and maybe teach people that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a skill in that area, certainly.
If you like to cook.
You can extend that. Plus you can learn and be a little more creative in what goes on out there. Because the kids programs, I think, are fascinating. They have some programs, little small agencies, where they're actually having the kids grow the food and then come up with recipes to actually eat the food. And it focuses on nutritious items, interesting foods that they may have never had before. So there's all the kind of things going on.
One of the things that I've always been concerned about is the food wasted in restaurants, that where people don't consume it. Me, I'm a brown bagger. I take it home. I don't waste it. But a bread basket will be set on your table, and you may not even touch it. And yet, as I understand it, the health rules say it cannot be served to another diner, which makes sense. But is that bread thrown out, or is it possible for you all to utilize that?
Not us. We deal in mostly non-shelf stable food. But DC Central Kitchen deals in perishable food or food of that nature.
So you're talking about you don't deal with perishable stuff.
Exactly.
It would either be frozen, canned, but you get fresh produce.
We do, but that would come from a retailer, not a personal donation.
Okay.
We typically don't take personal donations of frozen or fresh food.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I know that there's the health issues, and goodness knows you don't want to make people sick, but mm-hmm. also at the same time, I think there's a tremendous waste
mm-hmm. exactly.
that goes on. And I'm sure that kitchens, restaurants have mm-hmm. foods that they didn't serve that day that are perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But that they're not going to hold over till the next day, especially something like fish. If you can get it to somebody, you can use it.
Right.
It just seems like there's always opportunities, I would think, to make donations to help people. All right. Now, what are some of the other things that we should be telling our listeners about the food bank? You want money. You want resources. I mean, and I think it's a no-brainer. Why not do that?
You're exactly right. I mean, the need is clearly rising and, jobs aren't out there. It's not getting any better, and it's not going to get any better overnight. So we are going to have to continue to push and stretch, and the food bank is stretching to the point where we're under now. We were pretty much holding our own, but we're $200,000 short right now. So we definitely need to stretch, and we're going to continue to stretch because the need is there. So if our friends out in the community could stretch along with us, we would greatly appreciate
it. You need some donations.
We do.
And I think one of the very promising changes for the food bank down the road is a new warehouse, which they desperately need.
Mm-hmm.
They need, you know, even more efficient facilities. They need more freezer space, more refrigerator space. And mm-hmm. that, I believe, will, you know, start to break ground this summer sometime, if I'm recalling right. But it is an issue where the needs are there. The facility exists, and you can do everything from make a donation from your home online to actually get involved in your community, taking the tour, seeing it with your family, and maybe going once a month, decided, well, you know, I can make this contribution. I can find that.
What's the location there in D.C. in Virginia? Tell us where they are.
645 Taylor Street in Northeast D.C. near the Shrine and Catholic University, mm-hmm. and on Hill Park Drive in Lorton, Virginia.
In Lorton, okay. And you serve the entire metropolitan area.
Right.
Anyone who's listening to us and knows someone who's hungry, or if they themselves mm-hmm. are hungry, should call you and give us the number again.
202-526-5344 and ask for our hunger hotline.
Okay. And that's very, very worthwhile. How long have you been volunteering with them, O'Donna?
Well, particularly the last year. And when I went to actually a breakfast that they sponsored and heard the story loud and clear. I mean, you read it in the newspaper or hear it on the news, but to hear it directly from the food bank, I said, you know, this is something I want to mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. And so I have recorded some public service announcements that WTOP
well, we hope we can get those.
will be running.
Uh-huh.
So to try to increase awareness, that's kind of how I'm looking at my volunteer, in addition to being there and mm-hmm. getting involved with some mm-hmm. of the kids' programs.
Well, I mean, it's such a worthwhile thing. I know we contribute financially to some of the programs. And I know I have friends who go and cook and serve, and you know, it's a wonderful thing to do. I mean, it's something that we can do to reach out to our community. Now, in terms of donations, you'll accept donations of any size, right?
Oh yes.
If people have canned foods and things they want to donate, they should go to their local agencies.
They can go to the local agency, or they can bring it to us, or they can start up a community food drive and also call that same number.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Talk to Molly, mm-hmm. and she'll get you all set up with maybe a poster or a flyer and give you some
maybe
ideas.
Maybe what we should do, instead of having the kids selling lemonade, that they should be out there collecting food on the corner.
That
right.
would work.
Right.
Canned
that would
food.
Work. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I know our church has once a month a food drive.
Uh-huh.
And so people kind of know on the first of the first Sunday
yes,
of the month.
Yes, yes. A lot of organizations do that. They'll say, this is what we do. How many employees do you have?
About 84, and that includes about 7 part-time.
Well, that's not very many for
no,
what you do.
Not.
That's where there's 11,000 plus volunteers.
They work very hard.
Come in handy.
Yeah. If someone wants to volunteer with you, what are the requirements? How many days a week do they have to give, or what is the...
We are very flexible. We have ambassador volunteers who work in the offices, but if you're going to help us sort salvage, the minimum age for kids, it's important to know, is about 12, and that's because the heavy cans. We don't mm-hmm. want anyone dropping it on their foot and getting hurt or hurting someone else. So other than that, you can come. We are open Wednesday evenings, and on Saturdays we have 2 different shifts in the morning and the afternoon, and pretty much every day we've got 2 groups going on.
Wow.
Very busy.
That's amazing.
And
it's
that's when we have the salvage. Let me cut in. Salvage has been low as well. You know, when we had the recent snowstorm, you know, we're used to getting grocery store salvage. Well, guess what? We all used all that food up, so our
That's
salvage
right.
dropped, and it's been tough to pick it up because the grocery stores are doing their thing. They're for-profit business, so that's
right.
a good thing, but salvage is down right now. So,
well, we just have a few seconds.
One of the other areas that the food bank's working on is a partnership with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation and Claggett Farm.
Hope that works, and that's the last word. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guests have been Crystal Hare, Chief Development Officer of the Capital Area Food Bank, and O'Donna Matthews, a volunteer with the organization. You've been tuned in to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for being with us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.